It is the Lake Show. Henry has a night off. As a matter of fact, he'll be back Wednesday. And tomorrow night on the program here on the Lake Show, it'll be Matthew Collar from Purple Insider, Vikes Talk, and a whole lot more. They are hot. Get ready for Chicago on Monday night, 1 week from tonight. You normally hear me on Saturdays filling in on the Lake Show, occasionally on the Huddle on Sunday. And right now we're going to talk Timberwolves. Jace Frederick joins, covers the club for the Pioneer Press and online at TwinCities.com. Jace, hope you're doing well.
Hey, Steve. Pretty good, man. How about you?
Yeah, good, good. Last night's game, it was one of those, I felt like Warriors fans really got into it when Curry hit just a bomb of a three to close out the third. Pretty entertaining fourth, but in the final 4 or 5 minutes, really got tough for the Timberwolves and just trying to do too much.
Yeah, they didn't score in the final 4:47 of that game, and that's kind of been a story for them for much of this season. Like, the clutch time offense, and it's been a thing kind of throughout Anthony Edwards' time as Minnesota, and frankly now in Chris Finch's tenure, as that's obviously coincided with Ant. It's been a struggle, and Mike Conley's kind of been an antidote for that in a lot of cases. And last night they went with Nikhil Alexander-Walker because he was playing well, and I understand that, but they just can't get good shots, and Anthony Edwards is just forcing up too many terrible looks, and they weren't falling. Sometimes they do, but it is a low percentage thing, and you still have a low percentage side of that. You can't go the last 5 minutes without a bucket and expect to win a game.
Yeah, and we learned, I didn't stick around for it, Ant didn't talk post-game, and Chris Finch, was pretty honest, and I think in his tenure has been very honest in his assessment of this team, and I think the players in general have reacted well to that, as well as can be expected when you know, at times you're getting ripped by the head coach, but it just wasn't a good look in a winnable game.
Yeah, Finch, certainly, especially with that, that among all things, like, I don't think anything drives him more nuts than a bad shot or lack of ball movement. And that is just something that, and well, he's certainly gotten better with his playmaking and his passing. Like, he's made strides there. Like, the ball can definitely get sticky, and he can try to, you know, hit, and basically Finch calls him like home runs. He oftentimes tries to swing for the fences late in games, like deliver knockout blows in situations that frankly don't call for it and wouldn't even be knockout blows. And instead of hitting home runs, sometimes he strikes out. And that really can crush Minnesota. It has a few different times this year. And yeah, Ant didn't talk, but from the sounds of it, he's very vocal even when he's not talking, like with the right in front of the recorders. And, you know, he purposely will go out of his way to say things loud so everybody can hear it. And he was acknowledging that, you know, it was on him. And that's great. The accountability is great. But at some point, you would like, when you're be taking accountability for the same thing over and over again, you would like for it to change. So we'll see if that progression takes place sometime this season.
Jace Frederick joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker here on the Lake Show. Henry has a night off. He'll be back midweek. You know, Jace, when you look at this team, it felt like in that four-game winning streak they had kind of turned the corner and shook off a slow start, and then you get this game in Golden State. But remember, you go into this weekend with two in San Francisco against Golden State, and the Warriors have been playing well, kind of a new-look team, and they've made some changes, and, you know, Steph Curry is still Steph Curry, that they're getting a split, getting out of there, winning one out of two still isn't that bad.
Yeah, I think for sure. The Warriors they got off to a really hot start with their team. They kind of lost their footing a little bit. I think they ended last night losing 6 of 7, but it still is a team that, like, went healthy, you know, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, and then, like, a bunch of decent players, and they're kind of trying to find their way in, like, a rotation and style of play that's going to work for them. But you just see, like, Steph was motivated last night, and he looked healthy last night, and he just looked, like, ready to go, and, like, he had his full juice, and when that's the case, like, Golden State is a hard team to beat. So, yeah, I think Minnesota would have taken ahead of the weekend 1 out of 2. It just, when the opportunity is there to get two, then I think that ultimately becomes the goal. I think they've beaten Golden State like 5 straight times. And so to drop one that you probably felt like you could have won, that's where you leave with a little bit of a sour taste. But now you get 4 days off before they put the Lakers on Friday, and time to kind of, you know, rest, and then also just like continue to work on some of these things that they've certainly improved on, but also could require a little bit more love and care.
Yeah, in reality, I think you've got these first couple of months of the season, and the Timberwolves are still very much in the mix. Have you seen signs that some of the bad habits, once again, taking away the lack of scoring in the final 5 minutes of the game last night, but have you seen some things, Jace, defensively that are positive signs, really, where the team stumbled here out of the gate? You know, defensively, sometimes they just wouldn't guard anybody.
Yeah, I think we've definitely seen it from Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels, who are supposed to be like these All-NBA caliber. Jaden McDaniels was an All-NBA defender a year ago. They just came out of the gates really slow, just not with any real intent on guarding on the perimeter. They just kind of coasted through the first, you know, seemingly 15 games of the year, and Minnesota's defense significantly suffered. And then when there's no ball contained and no ball pressure, and then like the other shortcomings, like a Julius Randle and maybe his lack of understanding of the scheme and willingness to fulfill kind of a low man role, and just kind of, I don't know, lack of ability, I guess, on that end of the court shines too, because now like everybody else is being counted on more when your supposedly star perimeter defenders aren't coming through. And I think Ant and Jaden have definitely upped their intensity, and they've played better on that end, and they've been more, especially Jaden these last few games, more of a game changer on that end like he has to be. And the Wolves have just put so much time and effort into like, okay, scheme-wise, here's where we need to be. We need to be aggressive here and here and here. And guys have bought in. And so they've gotten better defensively for sure. Like the four-game stretch they just had prior to last night was incredible. Defensively, the numbers that they were holding opponents to. So that is, I think, where they still believe their identity will be. And as we've seen, like their best basketball still probably comes from that type of defense that they have now proven, and I don't think it was a sure thing for a lot of people knowing that ahead of this stretch, but that they've proven they can still play.
And as you pointed out, there's a number of days off built into the schedule coming up, and they've got the Lakers at home on Friday, and then they go on the road to San Antonio to play the Spurs, kind of a sneaky good team this year. If I remember, the Spurs handled the Timberwolves pretty good earlier this season. And then Cat and the Knicks on Thursday the 19th, circle that date.
Yeah, it's an interesting portion of the schedule. Certainly the Lakers have not played super well of late, but you know, it's still the Lakers. And then the Spurs, you're especially right, when Wemby plays, the Spurs have been really good this year. Yeah. They've missed games, and they struggle a lot when he's not on the court. But when he plays, they've generally been a pretty solid team, and they're hovering right around 500, much like Minnesota. And then, yeah, all eyes will be on that Cat game. Obviously, his return to Minnesota, like that will be a celebrated event, I think, in a lot of ways. Like, I think fans will definitely shower him with praise, but then you also just can't wait to see, you know, like, and the Knicks is a premier game anyway, but you throw Cat's homecoming into that, like, it'll be a fun night at Target Center, and there'll be a lot of eyes on that one. And, like, what's interesting is they'll have another 3 days off before that. Like, they don't play a lot of basketball, and it's because of the in-season tournament and, like, the NBA saving the dates for the spotlight games, but you know, they have 4 days off here, and then they'll play two, and then they'll have 3 days off again, so plenty of time to fine-tune things and maybe be in their best form when Cat returns to town.
A year ago, the in-season tournament early on was kind of like, yeah. And now, maybe because the Timberwolves are a non-factor, I'm kind of like, yeah, whatever. I'm bored with it already.
I feel like that maybe was a thing. Like last time around, the fourth game, that final group play game was like, okay, they need to win by this much, and this team needs to lose by this much, and they'll be in. But they lost to Portland, and I honestly don't think that was the first game of it, and I don't think anybody even really thought about it again. So yeah, I think it's one of those things like in the baseball season, if your team's in it, you're really into the baseball season, where if your team is like a 100-loss team, you're like, baseball stinks. That's kind of where I think people are probably going to be at with this in-season tournament.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought it up. It's fair to say Cat will get a warmer welcome than Kirk Cousins did on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, I think I was not surprised. Like, it's football and whatnot. Like, not that Kirk did anything terrible here, you know, but I think Cat really has been here for so long and obviously was traded and, like, didn't have any say in it and would have probably preferred not to be traded and entrenched himself in the community and did so much good here. Like, there's no, even if he found Cat to be, like, an imperfect player, there's no reason that any ill will towards him. So I expect him to just get heaped with praise. I expect quite an ovation when he is introduced, and I'm sure they'll have the massive video and all that stuff, and it'll all be really well deserved.
Yeah, and final thought, Jace, before we let you go, and really do appreciate your time. Still early way too early to judge the trade, the value of the trade, and how all these pieces are going to come together. At what point do you say, you know, it's time to be concerned or they're going to be okay? I mean, is it early January? I mean, what are you looking at for this team to, like, really show, hey, they're a legit contender like they were a year ago?
I would say this next month and a half. Like, if we roll towards, like, mid-January and they're still a 500 team, well, the odds are that's who you are at that point then, until you change your roster. I mean, Dallas was not good last year, and then they made a couple key acquisitions at the deadline, and then they became a good team. But I don't think they were on that trajectory. Like, at some point through 40 games or whatever, you are who you are. And so, like, if this team can do what they've done the last week and a half here and continue to make strides, and now all of a sudden they're 8 games over .500 by that point, then they're okay. Then they certainly will probably be a contender in the West, and, like, we'll see when the playoffs roll around. But if they sputter, if they have more ups and downs, if they're a 500 team at that point, then that is probably when you're like, yeah, this is probably just a 500 team. Like, rarely is the switch really flipped in the NBA. So I do think, like, this trend of current play now will have to continue for them to feel really good about where they're at when it does come to, like, the trade deadline and whatnot.
Always good to visit with you. Certainly do appreciate the coverage, Jace.
Thanks so much, Steve. Have a good one.
There he is, Jace Frederick of the Pioneer Press, online at TwinCities.com. So Timberwolves let one get away. Ant just trying to do too much. At the end of the game, I was on with Vanita, sitting in for Henry on the 740 Sports, and I think that's kind of a good way to look at it. Just trying to do too much. Hero ball, the post-game quote. But Lakers in town on Friday night. And always a fun game, 7 o'clock Friday night, on the road at San Antonio on Sunday. And then Cat and the Knicks Thursday the 19th at Target Center. That will be a tough ticket. Quick break. We'll come back. A whole lot more here on the Lake Show, here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. I don't have to shovel snow anymore. I wish that were true, but I do take it easy as I'm getting closer to retirement age. I'm not going to say how close to retirement age I am, but I will say I really take it easy. And there's a story about it in USA Today. How old is too old to be shoveling snow? Adults over 45 may want to be cautious. Now, when I was a teenager and the snow thrower was broken down, my dad would send my brothers and I outside and say, clean the driveway, particularly the junk, the plow left at the end of the driveway, and so on and so forth. And I would always say, yeah, I don't know, it's not a good idea. I didn't make it very far. So, and then we had a backyard rink, and we had boards and the whole deal. And when the old snow thrower broke down, we were doing that by hand as well. So I've shoveled a lot of snow in my day. But there is no doubt that it is no joke that you really need to be careful. And according to the American Journal of Emergency Medicine, nearly 200,000 adults were treated in the ER for snow shoveling-related accidents between 1990 and 2006, and more than 1,600 deaths were reported in that time. And it is still, you hear about heart attack snow, the heavy, wet stuff. Well, the old question is, how old is too old? And no one will really give you, because you may have a younger person with an underlying health condition that shouldn't be shoveling snow. Or you could get someone who's 65 years old and fit as a fiddle and works out all the time and is in perfect condition and can shovel snow without risk. But they're saying at about 45, you should start to take it easy. And The question is, what is it about shoveling snow? Well, according to retired American Heart Association expert Dr. Barry Franklin, he said this in a news release, static exertion that involves the contraction of muscles without movement in the surrounding joints. Arm work, more taxing on the heart than leg work. So, for instance, you're shoveling the heavy stuff by hand at the end of the driveway, and you're standing there, you know, into the snow, throwing it. That is very taxing on your heart.
It makes sense because it's upper body. So, yeah, it totally makes sense.
Yeah, and your legs not in motion or not frequent motion can lead to pooling of the blood in the lower part of the body, which is not getting back to the heart. Cold air constricts blood vessels, and strained body while lifting heavy loads, during which most people unknowingly hold their breath, which increases heart rate and blood pressure. So it goes without saying, and I do take it easy. And one of the things that I do when, say, for instance, we get the little nuisance snowfall, like maybe a half an inch or an inch, we've had a couple of those already, that I have the wider shovel that I just push. And I'll push and just shove it off into a pile in the grass. Now, when you have to lift, that becomes more difficult. But I have a snow thrower, and I will use that. And then I just walk along, even if it's an inch or two, I'll use the snow thrower. And then that can actually be pretty beneficial because you're just out for a walk, pushing the snow thrower along and so on and so forth. So I do take it very easy shoveling snow. And once again, the recommendation is don't push it. If you're out there and you really have no other choice, frequent breaks, go in the house, sit down, take a breather. Don't overdo it because it's ultimately it is not worth it. I don't know about you, Chris, and your approach to it, but I'm not shy about getting out the snow thrower. If I need to clean the snow, I'm not going to overdo it on that.
I don't
want to go to the ER.
I wish I had a snowblower. I really do, but we don't. And thankfully, the HOA where we're at, they take care of all of the landscaping and whatnot. Yeah, I mean that's one of the things that we're paying for with the HOA fees. But when we're out there and you know they don't get there on time, yeah, we do have to shovel. Like there are times where we have to get our own. You know, we have to take care of it, and that's okay. But I have gotten to the point as well, Steve, where I will take my time. I will be very cautious. And if I'm feeling a little overwhelmed, guess what? I'm going to stop. And I will come back because that snow is going to be there. So I think sometimes people, you know what? I'm tough. I can tough it out. There's no, you know, no big deal. I can do this. It's fine. And all of a sudden people are like, next thing you know, that's where things happen. But I feel like sometimes people like pride get in the way of just taking your time. And you almost seem like, yeah, I'm weak. I'm, you know, I can't handle it. It's like, no, you can, but your body's changed. Like everything about you changes as you get older, and that's okay.
Yeah, I remember my grandpa, my dad's dad, he lived over on the east side of St. Paul, and he liked to shovel snow, but even to the point where he was needing to pop the nitro pills for his heart, it's kind of like, Grandpa, you're done. We don't need you out there popping nitro to get shoveling the driveway. And he was stubborn. There's no doubt about it. And he said, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. And then finally it was like, no, we're taking the snow shovel away.
And I think it's a generational thing too, right? I
mean, yeah, for sure. And it's one of those. I will do light shoveling and that's it. And I still do yard work and garden. But I just know that activity, especially the heavy, wet stuff, that is no joke. In the article in USA Today spares it out. We haven't had the big snow event. I would assume that's going to happen at some point this winter. We've already had plenty of cold. But please take it easy. It really is no joke. And there are more and more services out there that'll help people that maybe don't have the wherewithal to clean the snow and do it. And if you have a neighbor who's a little bit older and you have a snow thrower, go over there and help them out. We don't need ER visits out of all of this when the inevitable comes. We're going to take a break right now, a little more college football. How about Bethel? Runner-up in the MIAC. They're on the way to the national quarterfinals. They have won three in a row to get to the quarterfinals. Once again, Bethel Royals head coach Mike McElroy joins us here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. It is the Lake Show. Steve in for Henry. Henry returns Wednesday, tomorrow night, from Purple Insider. Matthew Collar on the program. Chris Tubbs alongside through 9 o'clock tonight. By the way, all the news, all the weather, it looks like that big man hunt for the murderer, Brian Thompson, the United Health CEO, has paid dividends. We'll get more on that from CBS. Good news on the local football scene. As we mentioned, going into the weekend, four teams were alive. Bemidji State, Minnesota State, out of the Northern Sun in D2. And the Mavericks beat the Beavers to advance to the national semifinals at Valdosta State. And Todd Hoffner from Minnesota State joined us earlier in the program. And in D3, MIAC champ St. John's, runner-up Bethel, go into the weekend. And the Royals go on the road, beat Wartburg. Johnnies fall at home to Susquehanna. And the winners will meet in Pennsylvania next Saturday. And the head coach of the Bethel Royals in his first year, Mike McElroy, joins us on the line. And, Coach, congrats on a great year. You got to be proud of your coaching staff and all the players.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a fun ride, and man, we're just excited to still be playing ball here in mid-December.
Yeah, and what a run. Get into the playoffs. Field has expanded to 40. You play in the first weekend. You won three in a row and still going. I mean, that is a tremendous run. It is not easy to win three in a row in the playoffs.
Right. When we've been laughing too, like for us, our playoff football really started against Concordia, which was almost a week before the regular season was done. We had to win that one to get into the MIAC championship game, and then you got to go play St. John's up there in the MIAC championship game, and then you get rewarded for that with the ARC team, and then the champion out of Chicago, and then Wartburg. So it is. We've been five straight playoff games. We keep telling our guys like you won five in a row or run four out of five. So it's, it's been a battle. I'm just proud of the way our guys have handled it. And, it's been a long road here.
Your first year as the head coach, but you've been around the program for quite a while and take over for a legend in Steve Johnson. And I can't imagine he's had an impact on so many young men. And I'm sure Steve had a huge impact on you.
Yeah, it pretty cool to learn under a Hall of Famer for 7 years that I was there, and really kind of didn't know what I was getting into when I showed up, and to just be molded by him and probably the most authentic guy that I've ever been around, from the way he lives out his faith, from the way he loves his guys. It was just like, man, he was what you kind of want to be when you get to be that age. It's just like a guy who knows who he is and is authentic to it, and again, just loves the people around him really well. And so being able to kind of just be around that and rub shoulders with him for 7 years, it was awesome. And I think it's just kind of led to what we've been able to do now. He obviously built such an unbelievable foundation there. We get to just kind of build on it now.
You know, and Mike, in having an opportunity to talk to Steve over the years in other interviews he's done on this radio station and articles in the paper about him and other coaches in the MIAC and other legendary coaches in your league, particularly football coaches, and the impact you can have on young men not only football and winning football games, but just the impact on their life. I mean, I'm sure that's a huge part of it for you in taking over as a head coach.
Yeah, I think that was probably what hit me the most when I got the job was the, I would call it the weightiness of, I think, leading a place like this is, and I think especially about the work. You know, the Christian faith piece is a big deal, and we talk about that a lot, and we talk about our big thing has been, like, how do we cultivate these young guys? And this idea of cultivation is, like, can you take something that's fragile but has a ton of potential and put in an environment where it can flourish. And so we talk about that a lot as coaches. We talk to our guys about a lot about that. Of like, man, we're going to try to cultivate your football skills, but we're going to also do it with your heart. We're going to do it with your training. We're going to do it for you to get out of here and be a great dad and a great husband someday. And it's also fun to try to win football games alongside of that. But we know it's a lot bigger than that. And it takes time. I think that's what we're learning. And I think what our guys have bought into is, like, it's not something that just happens overnight. You become slowly and something that you really got to work and invest in. Otherwise, you know, you don't get to reap the fruit and the harvest.
Mike McElroy joining us, head coach at Bethel on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. And you come into this job, but familiar with all the players and the new guys coming in, and really a terrific year and a terrific league, and week in and week out, it's just got to be a lot of fun to go to all these venues and play these games. It is the MIAC. I love the league, and I've loved following it for all of these years, and it just kind of the tradition and the rivalries.
Yeah, it's been really fun. Just the rich history that we get to be a part of. And again, some pretty awesome programs and some pretty storied programs. And then for us to kind of play a small role in that has been really cool. I think it's been fun, too, with the staff. So we have four full-time guys on staff. I'm like the old guy now. I laugh. Like, I used to be the young guy on staff, and I hired a bunch of young bucks, and so at 36, I'm like the old guy, which is a little bit scary. But what's been fun is we have three guys on that staff who played for me, who are full-time guys, and played for Coach Jay. And so guys that just kind of get it. They get the league, they get recruiting, they get what it means to be a Bethel football guy, they get what we're looking for and the type of student-athletes we're trying to bring in. And so that's just been really fun to have those guys go through the program, grow up in it, understand what it's about, understand what we ask, and then now be able to pour back into it. And they're all young dads and young husbands in that. And so it's just been fun to watch those guys grow up. That's all we're trying to do is take a bunch of these guys who are knuckleheads, and hopefully they're a little less of a knucklehead when they leave.
Yeah, your team playing well. You don't win three in a row in the playoffs. You don't get to the quarterfinals in Division III. I mean, you know, people talk about, you know, big time college football in the playoff or the FCS or D2. A lot of good football players at this level, especially you get this deep into the tournament. That there's a lot of talent on the field.
Yeah, I think you know, it's fun when people in Minnesota know about the MIAC just because of the good players that you hear coming out. And again, the media coverage that we get being in the cities is pretty cool. But I think people, the talent level is pretty fun. You know, the guys that, you know, playing against every weekend. And I think some of the guys that we got in our league and even some of the guys on our team that are getting a lot of national recognition is it's fun to be around. I think it's exciting to be able to coach at a place where you can coach really talented guys. And, you know, it doesn't mean that you're on ABC or ESPN every weekend, but you still get to coach these guys who are playing at a really high level. And, you know, we've had three guys go to NFL camps in the last 5 years. And so it's like you're coaching at a, you know, you don't think about that a lot in the MIAC, but we've had a bunch of guys from our league get tryouts. And so it's like, man, you get to do this at a small scale and still coach really good football, which to me is really appealing.
Yeah, and you know, there's still this sense, and I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, name, image, and likeness, and big time, and all the money. But the thing to me that I've always liked about the MIAC is, in Division III in particular, it still is true student athletes. I mean, these kids, not to say they're not in the big time getting an education, but it is true, pure student athletes.
Yeah, I think for me it's been, you know, it's been the sweet spot of I've been at every level. I've been able to coach at high school, coach Division II, and then at Minnesota for a bit, and played FCS. And I think for me, what I love is like I think it's a great challenge as a coach to be at this level because again, you don't have a scholarship to hold over guys. You don't get to threaten them with, hey, if you don't do this, you got to leave. Like the coaching truly has to be relational and it has to be transformational. You know, whereas the transactional piece at that level, if guys are in the portal, if it doesn't go well, or I'm going to go somewhere where I can get more money. And you got to find, keep, retain, train, lead, care for guys. And there's no bargaining chip, right? It's like, hey, I'm going to do this because we care about each other. We care about being good. And I think that that's a powerful motivational tool. And if you can find the guys that care deeply about that, you got a chance.
Mike McElroy, head coach at Bethel, there on the road to Pennsylvania, Susquehanna. They went in and beat St. John's, and now the Royals get them in the quarterfinals. About some of your players, Cooper Drew is from Princeton, just a sophomore, having a really good season.
Yeah, Cooper's been a fun story. He was a guy we didn't know we were going to get till late, and actually came in this year, and it was a competition all the way through camp. And I remember we were kind of stressing having to name a starting quarterback about a week and a half before that first game, and he's just done an unbelievable job of just continuing to grow in Coach Dooling's system, who again is a new first year coordinator for us. I don't think people talk about that enough, what he's been able to do in the first year with really none of the guys that he recruited. He's done an unbelievable job, and Cooper's just an example of that, of a guy who's well coached and in a system that he's executing at a really high level right now.
Yeah, and the balance, throw and run. I mean, you've really got to like the fact that you can throw the football and run the football.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the key. In the playoffs, you're going to run into some teams that are a little more stout defensively, and so it's like you got to find where's the weakness and where can you try to expose a couple of things. And so we get that in the way that Coach Dooling has kind of set up the system and the way that Cooper's operating. It's really been fun to watch. He's really taken control and has just an unbelievable grasp on this thing, considering he's 16 weeks in to really even know in the system.
About your next game, quarterfinals on the road, team that went in and beat St. John's 41-38. I mean, that you're very familiar with the Johnnies. That's impressive for them to go in there and win like that.
Yeah, we're talking to our guys. Like last week, we knew it was going to be a rock fight with Warburg, where, man, it might be 10-7. Just because of the way that South those guys play. These guys are incredibly explosive. They're going to score a ton of points, and hopefully we can try to get in the way and at least slow them down a little bit.
Yeah, and what's the plan this week? I had talked to Todd Hoffner at Minnesota State. They were going to head down to Georgia on Thursday. What's the travel plans on getting in there and getting settled? Are you going to go in a little early?
Yeah, we're going to go Friday. We're going to leave Friday morning and just try to get in and get out. Part of that is, for the NCAA and kind of what they can do, part of that is kind of our schedule. And, you know, again, for us, like we're a final starts next week. So we're trying to give our guys as much time in school as we can before we, right. You know, so like say you don't have to think about when you're at different levels, but our guys are like stressing over finals. And then like, hey guys, we got a football game. We got to try to go win here too.
Well, Mike, good to visit with you. Congrats on a great first year at the helm, and I know everybody in the MIAC is pulling for you next week.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right, there he is, Mike McElroy, head coach at Bethel, the Royals, Susquehanna, PA, in the quarterfinals on Saturday. And by the way, we'll get a full game report. And a big thanks to Austin LeJess, the sports information director at Bethel, has been providing game reports all year, and we're going to lean on him again for a game report on Saturday here on CCO. 12 minutes now in front of 9 o'clock here at News Talk, 830-WCCO. I can't really blame Juan Soto or his agent, because someone was able to give him that money. But that money is insane. And I said it earlier, I just don't know how this is sustainable in a game when you have so many clubs that are really struggling on the television revenue. Now, you have the Habs, the Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers, etc. But this guy, Juan Soto is a good player. Is he worth that kind of money? I would say no. Capital N, capital O, exclamation point. It's insane that he got that much money. Now, I know it's what the market bears, and nobody complains about how much they paid Tom Cruise to be in a movie. I understand all of that. It's entertainment. It's entertainment dollars. But I think it sends a message to the fans of most of the clubs in the big leagues that there is the Habs, there's the handful at the top, and there's everybody else. And that stinks. That stinks.
It does. The Mets are one of these teams that they're playing by their own rules. Like, the Mets are not playing by the rules that most other Major League Baseball teams are dealing with when it comes to television deal. I mean, they're at, you know, Sportsnet New York. So, you know, they've got their own, you know, personal money that they don't have. There's no revenue sharing there. Like, they're just focused right in on them. And, I mean, Sterling Enterprises owns it. And, I mean, part of that is, you know, is Steve Cohen being able to pay that money for the Mets. He paid $2.4 billion, so it completely makes sense.
Yeah, I just think the message, though, that it sends to most of the fans of the game is not a good one. It is the richest contract in the history of sports. Now, a year ago, when you had the Ohtani sweepstakes, anybody who pays any attention to baseball, Chris Tubbs, mm-hmm. would say, whatever they pay Ohtani, he's probably worth it. Because he's done things that no one's done in the game since Babe Ruth. And everyone says, considering the impact he has in the Far East, particularly Japan, and the impact. Bob Nightingale told me the other night when he joined us here on the Lake Show and I was sitting in for Henry, the dollars he generates out of Japan as far as sponsorship deals with the Dodgers is huge.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The Dodgers made a decision where it's like, we're going to get paid back by signing Ohtani to that deal. Is Soto that kind of player? I don't think so.
No.
Is he a top 10 guy? Yeah, probably. But if I'm going to write the check, I'm not writing that big a check for this guy.
But
all due respect.
Because Shohei Ohtani is an international player who, like you said, he creates revenue and sponsorship dollars. This is not just about, you're not paying players now just for what they do on the field. It's about the merchandise sales. Like, it's about so many other things outside of what they are going to do.
Right.
Just on the diamond. So to me, this totally, I understand why. I think for the Mets, it's more of a message. Hey, we are going to go ahead and we're going to make an effort. We're going to do all of this. And I think when you're in the same market as the New York Yankees, and that's who he came from, I think this was a signing that was very important for the Mets.
Yeah. And there was a story in USA Today that said, you know, everybody's complaining about what, you know, Soto's getting paid. But, you know, Judge Judy in her prime was making $47 million a year being Judge Judy. Now, I can't confirm that. But it does get back to, here's a guy who's a very good player. But is this guy a first ballot Hall of Famer? Maybe. It's insane. And MLB has got some things to deal with. We have the news. We have the weather. Big thanks to Chris Tubbs and to you for tuning in.